mean, it's like craps, you know, documentary filmmaking. I'm really not much of a gambler, but you really got to push all your chips
in. This was high risk. High reward.
It's like a series of moves you have to make or a series of roles you're making. And every time what's at stake gets bigger and bigger, because I think if you're working at a place of high risk, the rewards are infinitely greater. I mean, as they would be financially in a casino. And for us, the rewards are like the depth of the film and the storytelling and the surprise. All of those things are come because you take those risks everywhere down the line, from the idea to the casting, financing, crewing, and then just see what happens.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Austin Meyer Podcast. Hope you are doing well. My name is Austin Meyer. I am a documentary filmmaker, National Geographic Explorer. And to kick off today's show, I have a bit of a programming update. This is the point in the show where I usually say, on this show, I interview the world's best storytellers in all sorts of genres about how they craft the stories they tell. But actually, today, change is in the air. As the Austin Meyer Podcast is now narrowing its focus on my true love, documentaries. That is right, documentary films, the craft of doc filmmaking, and everything you wanted to know about this beautiful nonfiction art form. And what better way to kick off this change than by welcoming co-directors Amanda McBain and Jesse Moss to the show. Amanda and Jesse are co-directors of the newly released documentary Boys State, which premiered at the 2020 Sundance Film Festival and was awarded the Grand Jury Prize. The film, which is now streaming on Apple TV+, is a political coming-of-age story examining the health of American democracy through an unusual experiment. 1,000 17-year-old boys from across the state of Texas gathering together to build a representative government from the ground up. The Sundance website has this nice little blurb about the film, which I thought I'd read. They say, quote, "High-minded ideals collide with low-down dirty tricks as four boys of diverse backgrounds and political views navigate the challenges of organizing political parties, shaping consensus, and campaigning for the highest office at Texas Boys State, governor." After the Sundance premiere of Boys State, notable, Apple and A24 acquired worldwide rights to this doc for a reported $12 million, which is extra impressive because, as The Hollywood Reporter reported, it marked the largest sale for a documentary ever at a festival. Not bad. In this episode, Jesse, Amanda, and I discuss how they came up with the idea to make a documentary about Texas Boys State, the unique challenges of filming a feature-length doc in the course of 1 week, and why a verite documentary like this is such an effective tool for holding up a mirror to our political system and divided country. Without further ado, I hope you enjoy my conversation with Jesse Moss and Amanda McBain. Jesse and Amanda, thank you so much for joining the Austin Meyer Podcast. It's great to have you. And to jump into today's interview, I'd love to hear a little bit about, it's been just over a week since Boys State was released publicly. What has this last week been like for you?
Jesse Moss.
I think a lot of feels. I mean, it's... It's intense. We've never released a movie on this scale with a company like Apple before, so that's really unprecedented. And their level of support for the film is really breathtaking, very exciting that they have the commitment to really push the film out into the world. And so we're just beginning that conversation, but it's been intense. Last week was like a fire hose. And actually, we're loving the public conversation on Twitter and Letterboxd and wherever we find it. I mean, not just conversations with people like you, but just kind of what people are saying about the movie, whether they went to Boys State or Girls State, what they think about the film. I mean, it's been almost uniformly very positive, which is great. But just stuff that is making us laugh every day and every night, that's fun to see. So,
I mean, it's true. Worldwide is not something that I've experienced really, and so even going into this week, seeing your poster with you know, Boy State translated into Russian, or then seeing some of the Twitter response in French, or, you know, that's really interesting because it is a film about American politics. And right. So to have the reviews come in from Americans and then a different set of reviews come in from wherever, whatever country they're viewing America from, that's pretty interesting, and didn't happen so much when we were hearing from people at Sundance in person. Yeah. Primarily that was Americans.
And what kind of reflections are you hearing from people in the way that it's relating to like the current political environment with conventions starting up? Mm-hmm. And how, like you just said, is that different than some of the feedback that you've gotten during the festival run up to this point?
Well, certainly some people look at it like a horror film. I mean, it is also co-released by A24, which people know has released some pretty good horror
films
in the last few years. It's interesting to see the film categorized as that genre. And that's also one takeaway. I think some people are very hopeful and are inspired by Renee and Steven. Of course, there's a lot to be scared of in the film. And I think that's, to us, the strength of the movie is this sort of polarity of hope and
despair.
That's,
I mean,
right.
We really do see in the film, as we saw in real life, the real spectrum of dream to nightmare scenarios. And I think that, you know, people coming to the film do bring their own politics, obviously, and also their emotions about politics. And this week in particular, you know, people are really amped up about November, whoever you are. And I think that it's kind of actually a good time, I think, for our film to sit into that conversation, because so much of the news that we take in from Washington, at least before the conventions, is hard to take because it's like a steady diet of darkness. And so this is a little bit of a sideways approach to thinking about, you know, polarization and the health of our democracy and civil discourse and all these things I want to be thinking about, but I can't take in the news all the time.
Yeah.
So I have felt like, you know, pre-convention, it was a space where people could chew on those questions and be entertained at the same time and kind of check the Rorschach test of where they are and the hope cynicism, you know, thing. But we'll see with the convent, you know, political documentary, this is the first one I've ever worked on, like kind of directly about politics, and the news cycle does matter.
Yeah.
So we are going to be heading into a lot more political coverage and a lot more, even more amped up emotion about this election. We'll see, you know, what that does to the viewing of this film, or then after the election, once we know the results, you know, all these things, it just sort of changes the backdrop in really interesting ways, but also, yeah, a little tiring.
Yeah, it really changes the lens on which people are watching the film and what messages they're taking away. Mm-hmm. If this is your first political documentary, what about this story when you were thinking of, hey, should we make a film on this or all the ideas that you probably had at the time? What captivated you about this one to make you feel like, let's invest all this energy into making this?
I think there's a few things. One is just wrestling with this big question, I think all of us are wrestling with, which is, how did we find ourselves in this place where we have these deep divisions, these intractable divides in our country, culturally, politically, that we seemingly cannot get past? And that question, I think, was particularly acute after Trump's election. And that's when we read about Texas Boys State, and we read about the secession vote of the legislature at Texas Boys State. And there was something funny about that, provocative. I think we instantly recognized that the space of Boy State as this prism of play acting that was also serious and potentially a kind of weather vane of the American mood could be a fascinating space as filmmakers for us to explore. And because it was bringing together teenagers with different politics to actually talk in a room together, that felt like a rare space to us and a space that we hadn't really seen explored in documentary. So I think the combination of seriousness and playfulness, the containment of the story was inviting. The unpredictability of what would they do next at Boy State? Would they have a civil war? Or would they reconcile? I think that's the question we're asking of our country now too. And I think we're always, as storytellers, looking for unconventional ways into these big questions.
Right.
The other fact of this film is that it's a political documentary where we are following both sides of the campaign, right? Or the, you know, the election.
Right.
And there's such amazing documentaries that have been made, political documentaries, War Room, Primary, a Perfect Candidate. I mean, these are great films. And they embed deeply in one campaign. And we thought, well, here's an instance where we're going to be able to sort of see both sides, go against one another and the machinations of both sides and the sort of, machination sounds like a pejorative word, but you know, the strategy, sorry, of both sides. Right. And so I think that was also compelling and to us, Boy State.
I love that. And so going into the week of filming, or the week of the camp, I'm really interested in this idea of the container as well. Cause as a young documentary filmmaker, you know, I see, like, my other favorite documentary besides yours this year that I've seen is Father, Soldier, Son, which was like 10 years. And I'm fascinated by the time length that these projects can take. And so I was really interested when I heard that yours was pretty much filmed in the duration of a week. But I also can't imagine as directors, like, what's the pre-production process so that your team is like ready to fire on all cylinders by the time that this like blitz goes? Like, what was your focus in pre-production to make sure everyone is ready to do this thing?
I think also previously it wouldn't have been possible for us to make this film because of the level of production support required to pull it off. Verite films, unscripted films like this have been historically for us impossible to finance. People don't know what the story is, what it will become, when it will end. And those are not things that funders are good with. And,
right.
And so The Overnighters and Speedo, Full Battle Rattle, these are movies that had to be made, were bootstrap financed. And I think
also filmed over years and years and years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we did like the containment. I mean, my feeling is, like, as we know from good drama, fictional drama, like, or real life, like, you could have in the span of an hour and a half in your life of real time, the most transformative experience in your entire life. Right. Like, a film doesn't have to be longitudinal to be good, but you do get incredible transformation over 10 years or a year and a half in the case of The Overnighters. And that's really exciting and appealing. But we were told, we didn't completely believe it, but we were told that at Boy State that this week was so intense and comes at such a kind of interesting point in their lives that for young people, it could be truly transformative. It could be a coming of age story. And we thought, that sounds like hype, but maybe let's see if that's really true. And so based on the idea and the access which we secured, we got money to build that big team we needed to pull this off.
And you told funders, presumably, like, it's Verite, we don't know where it's going to take us, but, you know, I think we all just got to put trust in the fact that people will change, people will transform, the intensity will reveal itself on the screen.
I mean, it's like craps, you know, documentary filmmaking. I'm really not much of a gambler, but you really got to push all your chips
in. This was high risk.
It's like a series of moves you have to make or a series of roles you're making. And every time what's at stake gets bigger and bigger, because not gratuitously because you're trying to hit the big score. It's because I think if you're working at a place of high risk, the rewards are infinitely greater. Mm-hmm. I mean, as they would be financially in a casino. And for us, the rewards are like the depth of the film and the storytelling and the surprise, all of those things are come because you take those risks, you know, everywhere down the line from the idea to the casting, financing, crewing, and then just see what happens.
But it was a new experience for us. We've been making films together for a very long time. And this, other films have felt a little more, I like to say, like the intimacy of like a singer-songwriter in a coffee shop, right? And you're sort of, there's something really beautiful to that and having just a very small group of people and, you know, there's a real meaning to that. This was going to be more like, you know, an orchestra or stadium rock, right? We're going to need a full band, and we're going to need, you know, not just one guitarist, but like four. And like, you know, so preparing that and sort of preparing ourselves for this different kind of crewing up and the kind of collaboration that we needed and the kind of A game that we needed all of our six cinematographers to bring. That was new to us in documentary. We've been on fiction film sets, so I'm familiar with being running that kind of a set and like being around that many, you know, keeping everybody happy and on point. But this was documentary. So unlike scripted, it's you do not know what the next set piece is going to be. Yeah. Or, you know, you can plan, but then you gotta be ready to dance, frankly, because it's all gonna change every hour. And there's a lot of people that you're gonna have to, you know, be, who are all in this swirl of pandemonium together. And that was new, and I'm just, for us, and I'm glad that it wasn't our first film, because it was really hard.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
I think the magic of what happened is that we really did manage to be, even within all that chaos, in at the right place at the right time for those big emotional moments.
Yeah, and I read jumping on that about your six cinematographer. So I read on IDA, IDA International Documentary Association, that there was a six camera crew, and you had a lead cinematographer who kind of built out that team. And it sounded like those cinematographers knew each other, had similar verite experience. They all shot on the same kind of like 30 millimeter prime lenses on the same Canon C300 Mark II, and we're kind of all aligned there. And then from the story side, when did you all start casting? Did you do pre-interviews? When did you start to meet some of the boys that were amongst this 1,100 that you might focus on?
Yeah. Well, as we were building the crew and putting together that team of cinematographers, we had the bigger challenge really of casting the film. And as soon as we got the green light from Texas Boys State organization that we could make the film or begin the process of making the film, we went down to Texas to start to meet them face to face, because you can't try to talk to teenage boys on the phone. You'll get nowhere.
Oh, it's the worst. And so polite, ma'am this and ma'am that. I mean, it's like,
yeah. Huh. So we, it was kind of like fieldwork anthropology. It was like going to visit teenage boys in their homes and in their barns and in their schools and American Legion halls. And it was fascinating. I mean, it took us 3 months and we met a lot of boys. And we used the camera as a tool because I think, you know, looking at people through the camera, having conversations with them, which were unscripted. Again, like there was no checklist. It was like, tell me why you're doing this. Are you going to run for governor? What are, you know, how do you feel about political division in America? It's just firing questions at them and sort of seeing how comfortable they were and how smart they were, how ambitious they were. And it was actually immediately apparent to us when we met the boys, the three of the four boys that we cast in the film before the event started. It was apparent really from the moment we met them that they were special and that they should be in our film. And of course, we didn't know how well they would do at Boys State or if their paths would cross, but we knew that they were all smart, complicated, politically sophisticated, also kind of vulnerable and open in ways that I think you need documentary subjects to be if you're going to collaborate together. And they're all different politically, socioeconomically, which was necessary. We really wanted a diversity of perspectives. Mm.
And did you use, like, because there are scenes in the movie where there's an interview process where the Texas Boys Legion are interviewing potential candidates for the camp. Did you go to them and say, hey, is there anyone who stood out? We'd love someone who is more on the liberal side, because if from the filmmaker's perspective, you may be thinking that would be an interesting dynamic. Did you use that knowledge to start that casting process?
They were super helpful in connecting me with many of the Legionnaires who had done interviews even before we started filming. And connecting us with high school counselors, who are also the other way that kids get nominated into this program. So we spoke with a lot of those. I think what's really interesting, you know, is who they think is a good candidate to A, go to Boise State, or B, be a main character in a documentary is not always the same person that I'm looking for.
What would you say that you were looking for that maybe they saw something?
Well,
different?
For instance, the person who's going to be voted most likely to be president someday in your yearbook, for instance, the guy that you see in that interview process who comes in his full military garb for the interview, that guy who is also a team rope, superstar in Texas, that's colorful and he's a solid guy, but he's not going to be a film character for me. And actually pretty quickly, I recognized he wasn't going to go very far in the program unless, he ran the platform committee, which is a pretty good position, but I did think it was interesting, just as an aside, there was a couple female Legionnaires who their picks for who they thought was the best person I should talk to ended up, one of them was Ben. And it was because, this woman was so floored by his, not only his deep passion of history and politics, but that he'd had this incredible attitude about what he'd been through in life. That to him was, this guy's gonna, he's gonna run the show because he just has this fortitude of character. And that was true with a couple of the women Legionnaires. They were less interested in quarterbacks and more interested in, not to say that quarterbacks also don't have fortitude of character.
Right.
Sure, there is those guys, but that wasn't the first thing they were looking for. They were looking for overcoming challenge and meeting that challenge and transcending that challenge. So I thought that was really interesting. But we had many paths to finding people. That's just how we found Ben.
Yeah, gotcha.
Steven was not recommended. We found him just out of sheer stroke of luck that he showed up to an orientation for 300 kids outside of Houston. And he's a quieter kid. And thank goodness Jesse was there to just
take credit for that.
There we go, Jesse.
Kid too. So,
and that's, I think that in no kind of rational analysis is Steven cast in this film, and in no kind of rational world does he do well. But that's, I don't know. He did have a special quality to him. He wasn't the loudest kid in the room, but he had some, I think he had what you see he has in the film. And so I wasn't the only person drawn to him. And it's unquantifiable, and it's not, charisma isn't the right word for it. I don't actually know if there's a word for it, but it is in description, the thing that makes me excited about documentary as a form and finding people whose stories and paths are not on the sort of the beaten path. And you can let your camera look over there, which in a nutshell is what Boise State was for us and what Steven was for us, is to find another way in.
I mean, that being said, Robert did, was also very interesting to us as the guy that you would expect to see. The minute he walked out of his room to be interviewed, he kind of descended the stairs and did a little hair thing. And it was like, oh my gosh, you just walked out of a Richard Linklater movie. And this is high school. Awesome. But then he sat down and started talking about politics. And frankly, he's had a lot of experience and had been a page in the U.S. Senate and had some very just kind of, they were very mature thoughts on the problems with, politics today and this, that, and the other thing. And I was like, oh, okay. So that was the first surprise. And then he's just kept on surprising us. And I love that. So,
I think the fact that you, his interviews were so revealing and showing this dynamic, multifaceted character, because I remember when I first saw the film, I went my emotions and feelings towards his character, it was just roller coaster throughout the whole thing. So when you were shooting during that week, what were the conversations with the team like at the end of a day? Because I imagine something could have happened where the first day you tell the cinematographers, all right, we're following Steven, we're following Robert, and anything could happen. They could get sick. So how, at the end of days, were you like huddling up with the team and saying, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're seeing, okay, here's our strategy for tomorrow? What were those conversations like?
Well, it was a little bit like battlefield triage or something. During the shooting days, and we would be crossing paths with members of the team and getting quick reports about what was going on and who had flamed out and who was like combusting in a way that was interesting, and did we need to follow that new character? And at the end of the day, it wasn't like a kind of rational debrief, but it was a kind of decompression and a kind of broad strokes. How are we feeling about where this is going, and you know, what are the connections that people are forging with their subjects? Because we had assigned DPs to different characters. You know, we were very intentional about that Martina Rodwan would shoot with Ben, and Wolfgang Held would shoot with Robert, and Daniel Carter would shoot with Steven, and Torsten would also shoot with Steven. So, I mean, it was lovely. Those debriefs came at the end of very, very long days, and people were absolutely fried out of their minds.
My shoulders were bleeding.
But, but it was beautiful to drink a Lone Star and under the warm, you know, Texas night, and to try to make sense of this madness around us, and mm-hmm. the sort of moments of transcendent beauty that we all strive towards as documentary filmmakers, and the frustration of like trying to have a coherent plan for this madness, which was hard. But there was Amanda was sort of more on top of this like war room that we built, which was where our production support team was ingesting media and kind of delegating, you know, commands to members of a team in the field. And that
I have two words: whiteboard. Like
you have like a big whiteboard up. Like,
oh, it was this amazing room that the University of Texas at Austin gave us, which was pretty large, and then both walls, what do you think, 20 feet long whiteboards on two of the walls. And we just had to kind of like, you know, have the schedule up and who's out where and what's happening with each character. And I mean, you know, the information share was important, and we were all on a text chain, and obviously the end of the day and every time we saw each person on in person. But the whiteboard really was like
the map. It brought method to the madness, to the extent that could happen. And I think, I mean, baked into the approach, though, was like working with people who are fundamentally able to roll with it. And I mean, if you do this kind of work, like you just accept that, you know, you go long because you go long. You don't punch a time, a clock or a time card. And that's the beauty of it. And to respect that. For me, I think for us, but more so for me because I functioned as a director shooter, there was a surrender of ego to a bigger collective team and trusting them and their relationships with the subjects, which usually I'm very protective of, and because that's kind of the foundation of the film. So it was wonderful and scary to surrender some of that control.
I love that.
It's the only way to make the film.
Yeah, absolutely.
We had to pivot royally, though, on day one, because we had miscalculated on sound. So
what do you mean by that?
Well, we had sent DPs out with lavs, you know, wireless, and thinking this one man band thing was kind of, you know, and a camera mic, but thinking that was going to be sufficient. But as you can see in the film, like the audio environments in the bigger rooms. I mean, when you have 700 shouting 17-year-olds, you can't hear the conversation even if you are right next to the person you're following. And that we had to pivot very quickly. We only had two sound guys we brought in from New York. And so then we had to scramble locally to-
Like if you'd ever held a boom pole in Austin, we hired
we
you.
We hired you. It was a real shift. So then
day 2 through 7, did you have someone with a boom mic following all those main characters?
No, we never had enough sound recordists to have one dedicated to every character at all times. It was a little bit of rotation.
Okay, so. Gotcha.
Although Ben always had that.
I was also really loved the fact that there seemed to just be so much tension in the film. Like I was constantly asking myself the question, like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And sometimes there's so much tension, but what you're really filming is like a bunch of boys, like trying to get signatures on a piece of paper. Yeah. Like it could be not tense at all.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, from your perspective, what do you think created so much tension throughout the movie in like giving a speech in a lecture hall or getting signatures on a piece of paper? How did you create that?
I would say there's a couple of things. One is just, do we care about the people? Have we established a way for the audience to connect emotionally with these people and what they're doing? Do we care about what they're doing? And I think finding, as we've talked about, finding these guys who we actually really do care about, even if we don't share their politics, we're invested in what they're doing because they're interesting and they're clearly passionate about it. I think it's also giving the audience the framework to care about this political drama in a nutshell, in a microcosm, because it's not Washington, it's not the US Senate, but we understand, we bring the frame of reference that we need to bring to this play. It's essentially a play. And there's a kind of suspension of disbelief that the play will enact a drama that will provide insight and revelation to our lived politics as a country and as a people. And if you accept that, and we signal that at the top of the film, one, by the George Washington quote, which is provocative, and two is that first scene, which is a conversation in the classroom, is kind of intellectual, but it's about some big ideas. And it's saying, okay, there's more than boys being boys here. There's some ideas at stake here that have to do with our democracy and our electoral process. And we give the audience that information to then say, okay, this drama is about something maybe inconsequential, but it'll unfold in a form that gives me the kind of reflection that drama gives us. That's why we watch it.
That's right. So I think the beginning, there's so much work that gets done in the beginning of the film, right? So you have to lay out the sort of rules of the universe. And in this case, there was a lot of exposition as to how the game worked and this and that and the other thing. But also that buy-in and the why this matters and why this matters to you watching, those are all like, you know, you take a long time to get that right. Always the beginning 20 minutes of the film is always
so hard.
Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, it's absolutely.
A dead show.
I think the other thing that importantly, yeah. I mean, and elections are just inherently dramatic. I mean, they pit two people, two sides, two views against each other, and there is a definitive outcome. And for a viewer, for us and the viewers to understand that there will be an end to the story. There will be a victor and a loser. Is important. And now, you know, sometimes I feel like derisively the film is, this is a minority opinion, but referred to as a contest genre film, which I think really diminishes what's actually happening in the movie. But it is on some level an electoral contest. And we lean into that drama. I mean, we could have made a movie that was entirely about the legislature at Texas Boys State or the news network or any other number of other stories.
The talent show.
Known Christopher Guest film. But the race for governor is the highest office. It creates the most drama. It pits the parties against each other. That was a natural in our decision making. And I love a good election film, as Amanda was saying. You know, often you're stuck on one side, except for one exception is the Robert Drew film Crisis, which films with the Kennedys in Washington and George Wallace in Alabama. And that's extraordinary. And very few political films can do that. This happens to be about a bunch of teenage boys in Texas, but the fact that they're on opposite sides is really inherently very interesting if we can see that play out in the film.
I have one more thing I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
It's a good question.
Yeah.
And I the other fact is the event itself is incredibly compelling. I mean, I was amazed that I got all rolled up into this, you know, election. You know, day one, when you see all these PowerPoint presentations and everything, it was like deadly, right? And
you're like, oh no, what have I done?
Seriously, we were worried that we wouldn't have a movie. And then they kind of release, you know, then there's like the running of the bulls, right? They like release the kids out into the quad to get their papers. And it still felt, I was like a little bit sad for Steven in that moment. You know, you just inch by inch, and suddenly by the end, I mean, I was so rolled up into who was going to win that election. I knew that if we could get the edit to approximate the level of emotion we had just watching this thing play out, that we will have succeeded,
I mean, look,
hopefully, in getting out everybody else invested.
One of the movies that inspired me, maybe us, to make documentary is Hoop Dreams. That's a bunch of, about a bunch of high school basketball games. Really, on like a macro level, who cares? And yet it's one of the supreme works of nonfiction of mm-hmm. modern times. And it's, I think that, like, I guess that's just, what is that? You know, why can a basketball contest in a high school gymnasium, Hoosiers, I mean, that's drama, that's scripted drama. Why do we invest so deeply in these stories, you know? And maybe that's a conversation beyond the scope of this podcast. I think it's a really interesting one, but I think it speaks to the theatrical form that, you know, whether it's playing politics or playing basketball, which I also think that cinema verite documentary leans heavily into, if not is wholly based around, which is that there's a performative theater that is happening on screen. And beneath that layer of performative theater are the kind of real life struggles of the people engaged in that theatrical right. act. And you can't have, for most verite films, sort of traditional verite films, you have to have both layers. Mm. And that's why so much verite is about people who are performative and engage in some sort of public
actors, musicians. Right.
Yeah.
Whatever. Right. Well, you bringing up those first scenes, like that's so fascinating to hear, because just like you putting it out there right now, I'm thinking how important those were to like really set the stage. Not only that first scene where they're talking about very real political stakes, but also the title screens when you're showing like these are future leaders of this country.
Yeah, that's right.
I thought it was so fascinating that it's working on these two levels of you're watching this film, and oftentimes I'm thinking, like, I lose track of the fact that these are children, like these are kids. Yeah. And that's why I thought it was such a brilliant choice to like follow the talent show and follow that conversation where Robert's trying to come up with a campaign slogan mm-hmm. and the guys are just like, I don't know, it seems too long. Because to be able to like have the audience lose ourselves in going on this ride with these people that sometimes don't feel like kids at all because they're this mirror mm-hmm. of our political system, but then to reel us back and be like, hey, just as a reminder, these That's are right. like high
I think
school
what,
boys.
What we're talking about is also the tonal range of the film, which is really important and something that we thought about and our references in undertaking the project were, well, just personally, the very first film we ever made is a verite film that has a big heart, but also made us laugh like insanely, because it just found comedy in everyday life, which is there if you look for it. And I feel like a lot of documentary is deadly serious, maybe rightly so, but it's an oppressive form sometimes. And I think that there was...
We've made those films. I mean, listen, this is an important...
I've made movies...
The last verite film we made, there is only one laugh.
But there was a laugh in the inspiration to make the film. The Texas Boy State Legislature, who cares? But yet they made us laugh because they voted to secede, but also they made us think, shit, that's kind of weird and potentially kind of serious. So that this movie, shooting it, I laughed. I mean, you...
So much.
So much. Mm. And I think delivering that tone, but also delivering the emotion.
Right.
And some of the really frightening stuff. I mean, people calling it a horror film on social media, which it is in part for some people. We never talked about it in those terms as genre, but it's horrifying. Like, you see some horrifying things.
Well, and that's the stuff you tinker with in your year editing. It took us 6 days to film and a year to edit. And I think that a big part of that year was not only getting the story right and the sort of proportions of all our four characters and the exposition of the front and everything else, but you also, you know, have to, the tone of this film, and if you grow too much of, let's say, policy discussion, and you lose the talent show, like if we get rid of the talent show, then yeah, you lose. So getting the proportions right on the sort of boyhood, manhood thing was a real challenge.
That's such paid off. I mean, that balance in everything, in the way you use music, from like the plunky kind of fun music to the really dramatic music during the signatures to the balance between the characters that you chose and their political views and their personalities to the tone of talent show versus politics. It's just such a dynamic film. Before we wrap up with the last question here, where should we point people to both see this film and to follow you all and all your filmmaking endeavors of the future?
So the film is up streaming on Apple TV Plus now worldwide. We also have a website, which is boystate.movie, which has upcoming screening, virtual screenings, which if people want to participate in a Q&A with our subjects, which are amazing, amazing. They can find out what we have on the calendar for the fall, which is a lot of exciting stuff. And they can reach us through our website,
JesseMoss.com.
Amanda's website is under construction, has been for at least a decade now, but we're easy to find. We're on Instagram and Twitter, and we'd love to connect with people about the movie and spread the word. So thanks. It's great to talk process and creative storytelling and drama and all that stuff. So.
So, yeah, absolutely. So to wrap up with my last question, there's a lot of people who listen to this show who are young documentary filmmakers or journalists themselves. And I'm wondering if you'd had one piece of advice to pass on to people who are earlier in their documentary careers or perhaps even late, a piece of advice when they set off to craft stories and have aspirations of doing so in a compelling way as you did here.
I think... Well, you're not going to make a film unless you just go make it. That's the first thing. The second thing is just to trust the process. There are going to be many moments where you sort of will feel lost, and just that's part of it, and to not, you will maybe fall in and out of your love with your project a couple times. And that was true on this film, really. We had a lot of, there were moments where we were uncertain, and that's definitely part of the process.
I think we talked about it, but for me, it's risk and quantifying that risk in whatever way is right for you. Is it financial risk or creative risk? And often it's all of those things, personal risk and creative partnerships. It's for me, the rewards have been greatest on the projects that have involved the highest risk. Why is that? I think you have to take yourself to a place as an artist where you're working in you're not being constrained by what you think you need to do, what job you took because you needed a paycheck. And I've taken plenty of those too. It's really where you can just follow your own instincts with as little influence from outside as possible. Yeah. Call that intuition, call it risk. That's, I so much of my life now is also about kind of recapturing that freedom, which you have when you're younger and you have less to worry about, I think, and maybe there's less going on in the world. So sort of constantly trying to get back to that creative space of risk taking.
Amazing. Fantastic advice. Amanda and Jesse, thank you so much for joining the show. And thank you.
Thanks, Austin. Be well up in Sonoma.
Movie. Yeah, take care of yourself.
Yeah, do that. Okay. Chase the news, but don't take any risks.
I'll be safe. Okay. I really appreciate it. Thank you so
much.
Take care,
man. We'll see you around in real life soon.
All right, for sure. I hope so. All right.
Bye.
I'll talk to you later. Bye. That's it for episode 44 of the Austin Meyer Podcast. Thank you to Amanda and Jesse for coming on the show and to you for listening. If you haven't seen Boy State, I really can't stress enough how much I recommend this film. For all those who have seen the movie, I hope that you got some extra valuable insight into how this all came together. Maybe you thought about a moment during this episode and thought, oh, that's how they did it, or that's why they did it. It was cool to have this conversation for me because all that was kind of coming together. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the Austin Meyer Podcast will now be focusing on documentaries moving forward. And to everyone who has been a consistent listener of the show up to this point, I just want to thank you so much and hope that you will stay with me and the show. I have a lot of ideas for moving forward, a lot of experiments I want to try. And if you are interested in documentaries or a filmmaker yourself, I'd love to hear from you. How can I add value to you? What do you want to hear about? Interviews, movie reviews, talking with cinematographers about cameras. What topics are you interested in? If you have any thoughts, I can be reached at Austin Meyer Films on Instagram or my email address, austinmeyerfilms@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. Okay, that is it from me. Sending you all wishes of health and happiness. And as always, go out and tell some stories.